Welcome to the OntoIOP meeting. Sorry, all of you muted us. I especially welcome Ed Skowiak, who seems to be the first time at this meeting. So welcome. And we're still waiting for Isa Kendall.
Although she said she might come in late, I think she said.
Okay. So, yeah, today's topic is the preparation of the presentation of the OntoIOP request for proposal at the OMG technical meeting, which will be at September 23rd to 27th in New Brunswick. And Michael is so kind to present the OntoIOP RFP there. We have sent out the RFP to the OMG at August 26th, and we have received a number of comments from Roy Bell, and so I would suggest that we go through those comments and discuss necessary or desirable adaptations of the document. Elisa seems also to be there now, at least in the chat. Yeah, so are there any other suggestions for the agenda?
No, sounds good.
Elisa, are you there? No. Okay. Please open the document. Elisa has sent around the mail, some 14 hours ago, and the document was attached there.
Is there a link to it too? If you scroll up on the chat where it says agenda, it's a link to the ODT.
No, sorry. The ODT is the document that I have sent around.
Oh, is that not it?
No. The ODT is basically, we have last time agreed upon using ODT and LibreOffice for maintaining the document. But we have sent a doc to OMG on August 26th. And the comments that we have received by Roy Bell are basically changes to this doc. So it's a doc again. So that's seems to indicate a first problem with our ODT strategy. So I would suggest that we go through this talk that Roy Bell has sent Elizabeth, and Elizabeth has forwarded it.
I didn't send it to everyone, I don't think, Till, so you may need to send it around if you didn't post it already.
Yeah, I don't have a copy.
I didn't get it.
Oh, sorry, yeah, I just see that it's only a mail to Michael and me. Okay,
And I'm here, although I'm going to need to drop in and out. I've got to get Tommy up and ready for school while we're on this morning. Apologies for that.
I just pasted the link to the August 26th document on the chat.
Yeah. So then I will send around the document to the list. Sorry. So I thought that this document has gone to the list. So sorry. I have just send it around, and then you can open it. So, Ed, you are also on the mailing list?
I should be. I get the invite.
Okay. So you should have got the mail now?
Yes.
I did not.
Find out if you're on our mailing list.
Unfortunately, some of these things go into quarantine, and I won't see that till later.
Ed, you are actually not on our mailing list. So if you could type your email address onto the chat, then I can add you in. Maybe right after this meeting.
Okay, I just said it.
Okay, that's the wrong place to type it, but that's okay. I got it.
Okay, sorry.
Okay, so please use the PDF that Peter just had posted in the chat. But it will require a password.
Yes.
Into the chat.
So, for people who forgot the password, hang on.
That's a side question. Elisa, do we need to have everything password protected, or can we basically place these RFP documents openly accessible on the internet?
I think up to you. As long as you think nobody else is going to change them on you, it's probably fine to leave it out there. It's only when you get to the point where you're working on the submission where the OMG process says that it should be private. But, again, that's your choice as a set of submitters. I don't know that OMG enforces it heavily.
Okay, then I suggest that we, from now on, have an open place where we have our documents. Probably we shouldn't open up the current place, but just provide another place. Provide the document there. Aha, and the PDF has the problem that the changes are not marked there. I will try to produce a version with changes marked. Yeah.
The Word document has the changes in there. You just have to select that you want to see the changes.
The Word document, yeah, but Peter has produced a PDF.
Okay, there is a Word. There is a Word document too. Hang on.
An open office can open it with all the comments.
Yeah.
And this is that. I still haven't received anything.
And I will just forward the document to you.
Once we get it, I think let's skip to section 6 because that's where the substantive comments start.
There is some comments at the very beginning.
Yeah, but they're just wording. We should really be talking about substantive comments.
Okay.
Okay.
They're just editorial changes he had made, so
I'm not sure, but yeah, we can discuss this later. So let's skip to sections. So Ed, I have mailed you the document.
I got it.
Good. So section 6. So the first issue is about SPDR. It's mentioned in a use case, but it's not mentioned here in the problem statement because in the problem statement, we wanted to have only languages with standardized model theoretic semantics, and SPDR is mentioned later in the optional requirements or non-mandatory features, and then the question is whether we could have a use case that relies on things described in the non-mandatory feature. Is it possible to keep that?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay, so then I will just answer this and say non-mandatory requirements. Okay. Then the next one is about annotations. So, use case 1 said it's common practice to informally annotate OWL ontologies with those other axioms. And then the question is, are we saying that we want the standard to specify how to do these types of annotations? So I would say we want to have a language that can directly express these first order axioms in addition to the OWL ontology so that they are not mere annotations but kind of first class logical sentences in the ontology. Maybe we just state this after as part of the use case.
Well, I think we ought to actually say we're providing the capability for specifying these types of annotations. We're not saying how. I mean, unless I'm kind of reading more into his statement, right? We're not prescribing, the ways in which people must specify. We're simply providing the meta language that allows people to specify annotations.
No, but it's common practice to have all ontologies, and then the first order axioms are annotations as common, basically. So I think the whole point here is that we can, onto IOP, provide a framework where this has no longer the status of a mere annotation, but it's the kind of real logical sentence in some language.
Okay. And I agree with that. I'm just not sure if that's what his comment was about.
Okay.
I'm not sure if actually the use case describes that exactly what you were saying. Because it basically says direct and common practice informally annotated, but and with full axioms, but not that you actually, that we are going to introduce those axioms in, with onto IOP. This is that, okay, it is there, but not that we actually have that as a problem can be a solution. Maybe that's what the confusion came from with respect to the annotations. And I can vaguely remember also what you had a previous discussion on annotations that we don't do it, but refer to existing ontologies about annotations and how to handle that. If you really want to do annotations. So you have annotations, and axioms that are currently annotations but have to become axioms in our DOM framework.
Yeah, so we don't want to cover or to speak about annotations in onto IOP here. So I would suggest that we add a sentence, onto IOP will provide a means to replace such informal annotations by formal axioms in a suitable ontology language.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Which means we have to identify the annotations that represent first order logic and differentiate them from the annotations that are true comments.
No, mm-hmm. The user has to do that.
But on a YOP has to be able to recognize the distinction.
No.
No.
We provide a means that the user can replace such informal annotations manually by formal axioms in some suitable ontology language. Of course, also there could be some tools recognizing that this is a first order sentence, but that's not part of the standard, I would say.
Okay. That suits me, but I'm concerned that it doesn't say that. The implication is that any annotation would be examined, and I don't think that's what you want to say.
No. So then I would say onto IOP will free the user from the necessity to bend first-order axioms into informal annotations, and instead they can be expressed as formal axioms in some suitable ontology language.
Okay.
Okay, the next one is about the ODM uses a combination of words and UML to describe these transformations. Will the proposed new standard define languages and techniques that will yield the same transformations? Yeah, I would say that we should rely on the means of ODM. I'm not sure what ODM exactly does. So I think the ODM defines these languages as MoF models. And then there are several ways to express transformations between such MoF models. For example, QVT would be some possibility.
But what we're doing with onto IOP is actually defining the meta language that yields these transformations. I mean, that's what we're doing.
Yeah, so I agreed. So that needs to be stated. You're going to have to talk about, you're going to have to ask submitters to discuss the relationship of onto IOP with QVT. Though, and to say how they might be used either together or in a complementary way. Because of the fact that QVT, which, by the way, nobody uses, is an OMG standard. But you can't just say nobody uses it because it's horrible. You have to say, you know, here's why what we're doing is important, especially for ontologies, et cetera, et cetera. And here's how you might use these two things in a complementary way.
What else could be used instead of QVT?
OntoIO. But QVT is the main transformation language for transforms across MOS metamodels in the OMG community.
Yeah, that's why I'm a bit surprised that it's not really used. So OntoIO will not provide a meta language for expressing transformations. At least that's not what we have been discussing so far.
Right, but you need to come out and say that. And so you're also, people who respond to the RFP need to be smart enough to say, you know, here is the relationship between the two, and here's why we need something more or different from QVT to achieve our goals. You just have to have the statement in there.
See, with OntoIOP, we're specifying the relationships. We're not specifying how the transformation is done.
Agreed.
Right.
But,
well, that's why I kind of don't like the comment that says techniques. We're not defining any techniques.
Right. So I understand that's Roy's language. But, yeah. But I think having, you know, under issues to be discussed in the RFP, if you have mandatory requirements, optional requirements, and issues to be discussed.
Mm-hmm. Because conformance will require the existence of transformations that preserve, you know, the semantics as we're specifying within OntoIO. But we're not specifying the transformations themselves.
Right, and you should say there that under issues to be discussed, that submitters should talk about whether or not QVT is adequate for supporting that activity.
Okay, and if not QVT would be used, then what else? And so one possibility that we have employed so far would be just to use natural language and semi-formalized mathematical language to express them, like in mathematical papers.
Yeah, but again, that's not something that can be automated. So people are going to say, okay, and you're going to automate this how?
Yeah, QVT. I think QVT would be nice there. So Elisa, could you say why QVT is not used, or what would be some useful alternative for us? If we have all these MOS meta models, I wish we have a kind of standardized and tool-supported for expressing these transformations. I really would like to have that. And
right. So the right thing for respondents to do would be to say, oh, well, we're going to use QVT for this. And here's how you would do it.
Yeah. Yeah, but you said QVT is not really used, so what else?
Well, QVT is used by people who understand it, but it's not widely used, put it that way.
Okay.
And the reason I think this is true is that there are only a handful of companies who even understand MOS. And so, or who try to do these kinds of automated model transformations. So there's not a really good alternative. But having said that, there aren't a lot of organizations who have stepped up to the plate and are doing this. We've seen some recent successes, though, with people who've done BPMN transforms across like 7 or 8 different tools. It was really interesting. In Berlin, there was a demo of that. I don't know if you saw it, Phil.
No.
But very well done. So I mean, there are people that are trying to do it. It's just not commonplace at this point.
Yeah, but that's okay. So then I would say we should use QVT.
Right. But so here's the distinction. You're writing an RFP.
Yeah. So it's an issue to be...
what they're going to do, or you need to mandate that they use QVT for that purpose.
No, I think I agree it should be an issue to be discussed.
Right.
Okay, thanks. Then let's go to the next comment. There's on use case 7. That's basically for Tara to express some more details here, to add some more details.
Yeah, we really need a lot more details there.
Have you asked her for that?
Yeah, I have asked her. I could also write the details myself. She has sent me a detailed description, but this was too long, and maybe I just shortened that.
If you can, and then send it back to her and say, is this what you intended?
Yeah, okay.
That would be great, because I know she's got client stuff going on, and she's been busy.
Okay, so the next comment says, the following set of bullets do not seem to be related to modularity or logical theories. They instead appear to be a list of reasons why someone would translate an ontology from one type of expression to another.
Yeah, I think we could just take out the modularity operations, two words there, just various relations and logical theories. Modularity is one of them.
Okay. Agreed. Okay, the next one. Once one can have difficulty with matching and alignment even when two ontologies cover the exact same domain and are written in the exact same language. This could be due to using different terms to describe the same thing, or it could be that one or the other ontology describes attributes or relationships that are not relevant to the topic. Sometimes irrelevant attributes are introduced because an ontology description makes gratuitous references to an upper ontology. That's all true, but I'm not sure what to do with this comment.
It's not really relevant to the... I mean, we agree it's difficult to do the matching, but we're not saying that... We have to clarify, we're not discussing techniques. We're not telling people how to do matching, how to do alignment, how to do transformations. We're simply providing the meta language that allows the specification.
Yeah.
So you should be real clear about that, because if he didn't get it, then that means that it's not clear enough.
Yeah.
And the other thing might be that I would think you will want in an annex, an informative annex, not in the main body of the specification, to show examples of how you might use OntoIOP for that purpose.
So you might...
great utility. And it could be notional, but you probably want to be able to show, to have an example, and whether that's an introductory material or in an annex that's informative, you want to be able to walk people through how to use it for that purpose.
Yeah, we will have an annex. So we will have a submission based on DOL and the ISO document, and there already is an annex. But the question is, what do we write in the RFP? In the RFP, we could write there should be an annex with examples.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Including how to use the specification as a basis for doing those kinds of transformations.
Okay.
Or mappings.
Yeah, maybe something that Michael has typed into the chat could be place at the very top of the document, like under the objective or somewhere under introduction, probably under objective, and then you place a comment to Roy Bell saying that first line or that paragraph, that bullet in
mm-hmm.
the objective should explain we are not doing this. Instead, I mean, this is what we're doing.
Okay. So the next thing is the conservativity. He asked conservation. I would say no, because it's the property of an extension to be conservative or not. What's the noun for that?
No, I think conservativity is the word. I think it's a technical word that either he didn't see before or lacked the context here. So I'm not sure how to deal with this in general. Like all standards have this problem where, we use technical mathematical terminology without without providing either a formal definition of it in the document or assuming that the reader knows it. So do we need to provide some kind of glossary maybe with this?
Jerry?
We typically do that in any spec that does that adds significantly to what's already in UML. We did that in ODM, although not a long one. But the next revision to ODM may have a longer one. And we're making a lot of people that are submitting specs these days do that. I think it would be very helpful. And you also need an acronym list. But, I mean, those are sort of nits that would go in the body of the submission. I don't typically see a glossary in an RFP, though. If you think it would be useful, I'm certain that people would appreciate your including it.
Yeah. But there is already a glossary in the RFP.
No, sorry, I missed it. I just didn't remember that it was there this morning because I haven't gone back to review it.
Okay, so then we need to put a conservative extension in there then.
Yeah, I think that's a very specific term.
Okay.
It's already there, but conservativity is not, so I will add it there. Okay, next comment is...
Christoph, you have a comment. His hand is
okay. Christoph?
Hello?
Okay.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah. Could speak up a bit.
The question has just been resolved. I typed the question and the answer in the chat because it seems you haven't been able to hear me earlier. so let's go on.
Okay, thanks. Next item is on page 22, unified modeling language. One specific language whose conformance with Ontoic may be established. He writes, it should be a must. I tend to agree. The only problem is that UML does not have a standardized formal semantic, and in order to establish conformance with Ontoic, we would have to provide such a formal semantic, and there may be several formal semantics. They could all be part of Ontoic, but I'm not sure whether we really, given the situation that there is no standardized one, whether we could have a must here.
I think must is the wrong word, probably shall.
Shall. Okay, although semantically it's the same, but okay, let's have a shell there. Okay, then we have a comment about the in section 6.4 about W3C standards. That's about the May, and he says RDF and OWL should be a must. We have it already elsewhere, so yeah, I just add a clarifying or in the case of OWL and RDF must.
Again, should you use shall?
Okay.
ISO makes a big deal about the shall. Does OMG also have similar policies for that?
Yeah, so there's some RFC that describes the language that you should use. I just ran across it because I was reviewing an OMG spec last night or a proposed spec. You give me 2 seconds, I can find it. Hang on.
No, that's okay. I mean, just... Well, shall would be the right word then to use if that's, yeah. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, must is when someone tells you that you must do it, but shall is when you put it down on a document saying that this spec will meet or will conform to. So shall is the right word.
Okay, so the next comment is about the restructuring of sections. I think we can skip this now. I will try to handle it. Then there is a comment about the use of MOF to XMI. Yeah, I think we should mention this, MOF to XMI. Then the next one, this seems like another bullet. Yeah, that's again about sectioning. Okay, then the next one, in 6.5.5, we say that the meta language shall be in principle suitable for establishing conformance of languages listed in section 1 above and those listed as under languages without the standardized model theory in the non-mandatory requirements section. And then he says that we cannot depend on something in the non-mandatory section. I'm not sure how to deal with this. So I think, of course, we have a certain list of languages which are mandatory, and they should be supported by Onto.IELTS. But Onto.IELTS should, on the other hand, be so general that also other languages can be supported and not just those which we have listed as mandatory. And therefore, I here refer to the non-mandatory section, because we need some kind of generality. But this reference from a mandatory section to a non-mandatory one seems to be illegal.
I agree with that.
So what would be your suggestion? Just delete this reference?
I'm not sure if deleting it, because I think it's an important distinction.
We could say similar languages. So the languages listed in section one and similar languages.
Yeah.
Would this be okay?
I'm good with that.
Yeah. I think we can see how that works out. I want to go back and all over again just to make sure.
Doesn't the following sentence cover that? Applicable to any logical language that has a formal logic-based semantics.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I think we just said too much. I'd remove the section in question, the lines in question, and just leave that.
Yeah, no, I guess you're right. The next sentence has the requirement here that needs to be, and it's the requirement is the formal logically semantic. So yeah, maybe right, Terry.
Okay, so I write now. It should be principles suitable for establishing the conformance of the languages listed in section one and any other logical language that has a formal semantic.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, you're basically saying that the things in section one all have this model already. The formal semantics already.
Yeah.
So that's why I don't know that you need to mention section one again, except in passing as a side note to the fact that this is applicable to any logical language.
Yeah. I want to mention it because...
Well, any logical language, such as those mentioned in section one.
Yeah. Okay. So the next comment, also in 655, is that proposals will not actually show conformance for all these languages, but only for a subset. And then he asks, does this mean that the standard will only define techniques and not define the actual mappings between the list of supported languages?
Yeah, once again, we're not specifying techniques. And in addition, the standard does not actually define the mappings, right? The existence of a mapping is required for conformance, but the actual mapping is not part of the standard.
So then what this means is there's probably some clarification in the language needed again.
Yeah.
No, but I would disagree. I would say that these mappings can be part of the standard. So we have a number of languages such as OWL and RDF, Common Logic, that are mandatory. It should be shown to be conformant. Of course, these languages themselves are not part of the standard because they are standardized elsewhere. And then we have mappings between these languages, like from OWL to Common Logic, for example. And then Onto.IELTS does not work without such mappings. And then the question is, what is the status of these mappings? And I think at least part of these mappings, so say an initial small set of mappings, could be part of the standard, and the rest of the mappings would be defined via some registry mechanism.
Yeah, see, then it kind of creates two different kind of classes of languages. Either that, or we have to provide. We explicitly provide mappings for all the languages that currently have the semantics. Have a morphic semantics that we can specify the mappings for. And then we're getting into like a big swamp here, because then you're kind of standardizing certain mappings over others. When all we really require is the existence of mappings, like you said, in the registry.
One other thing is are the annexes part of the standard or not part of the standard. If we consider the annexes as not part of the standard, then the statement that we're not providing it is still true.
So they could be part, but you're going to have to say that. Maybe not in the RFP, though. It depends on really what you want from submitters here.
Could we have them as informative annexes so that language translations could be part of informative annexes?
Yeah, I would like that.
Yeah.
I'm just worried about making a specific set of mappings normative. It seems getting us into more than we really need to commit to.
Yeah, I agree with Michael.
Then I would say an initial set of language translation may be part of an informative annex.
I agree. I like that very much.
Yes, yes.
And in fact, I think that's really required for this to really get off the ground, for people to understand what's going on.
Okay, and then we have annexes shall establish the conformance of a number of relevant logical languages. And then the question is, will these annexes be normative or informative?
I'm thinking informative.
Informative, okay.
Informative.
I'm really glad I forwarded these to you, because I think his comments are pretty decent, and they're representative of what you would get from other AB members. And it may mean that you're in a lot better shape for New Brunswick as a result. I'm going to need to drop off in about 10 minutes for my ODN call, and so can we leave maybe 5 at the end, even if you haven't finished going all the way through it, so we could talk about getting ready for New Brunswick?
Okay.
Great. So keep going, but leave me 5 minutes at the end.
Why not do this now and resume later?
Yeah, Michael has to drop off anyway. So
at noon, yeah.
We're almost done.
Okay, so primary things you're going to need. First, you're going to need the revised RFP. And the one that you already sent to OMG has a document number. When you're ready and you've got a solid version you want to use for people to talk about in New Brunswick, you need to resubmit it to Jürgen and get a new document number, and then we need to send that to the different groups that you're going to be speaking to, ADTF and the ontology SIG at a minimum, so that those folks can do another pass on it. I would also suggest that I'll resend it to some of the other AB members and get their opinion on putting it on the AB agenda, which it could be for Thursday regardless. So I think definitely we want to do that. And so getting the new document number, once you've finished kind of restructuring this slightly and taking advantage of Roy's comments, would be useful, and if you like, I will forward that version to some of my other colleagues who haven't responded yet. The next thing you're going to need is a presentation that reviews the content of the RFP, and what we typically do is have both that presentation that follows the outline of the RFP and the RFP itself available on your desktop, so the people in the session in ADTF, in particular on the Wednesday, can look at the language in it and review it on the spot. And that often happens at OMG meetings. So what, again, we'll want to do is to make sure that the new document number is linked into the ADTF agenda so that people that are preparing for that session can go to the current version of the RFP and make their own notes on what they want to discuss while you're talking about it. So that process is very interactive, and we'll want to support it. So, again, I think that's something just to have in mind, Michael, that you're going to want to have for New Brunswick. And those are the main things. The presentation and looking at your dates to make sure those are doable for you all in terms of the RFP timetable. You definitely want a slide with the timetable in it, among other things. You want a slide with the bullets of the mandatory requirements, a slide with the bullets of the optional requirements, a slide with the issues to be discussed, identified, at least a high level, to be able to flip back and forth between the slides and the text. Some background material to remind people what this is about before those slides with the mandatory requirements. You absolutely want to review the timetable with people as part of the discussion. Those are the main things, and then people will have nits that they want to add about this, but I mean, you've done such a good job on it already that, you know, it may be the case that they suggest you try to put it in front of the AB on Thursday if the ADTF issues it on Wednesday. I mean, that's actually possible. I don't know that it will happen. It's probably more likely it'll get issued out of the December meeting in Santa Clara. But the possibility exists it's in good enough shape to go forward at this meeting. So I want you to be prepped for that. Does that all make sense to you?
Right. So the presentation, actually, it's not really a presentation about, like, OntoYOP in general. It's a presentation of the document.
Yes, but you should have some preliminary material about OntoYOP to remind them.
Okay.
I already have some presentation, the one that I have given in Berlin. Maybe
right,
we can reuse some material from there.
So one of the things that you want to make sure, also, look at your timetable again and make sure those dates make sense to you guys. I know you've already got a good deal of work done and a huge running start on this, which is not necessarily the case for a lot of RFPs at OMG. But it still looks short to me in terms of the initial submission deadline. So make sure that you guys think you can meet those dates. And we can always extend them, which we do constantly at OMG meetings. We're always moving dates out. But you know, make sure it's realistic as a starting point, is all I'm saying.
So,
otherwise, I think you're in good shape. I just wanted to make sure that, you know, we're on the same page. And, Michael, if you want a phone call one more time before New Brunswick, let me know. I've got meetings next week, Wednesday and Thursday in San Francisco, and I'll be out of pocket, so it would have to be sometime around that. And then I'll be there for Monday, so we can always get on site.
Yeah, because I'm arriving Sunday night.
Yeah, that's when I'm coming in as well.
Yeah, no, that should work.
Okay. I just want to make sure you've got everything you need before we hang up. And then don't forget, I think I sent you the list of things going on that I know about anyway. I'm sure there are others, but the things I know about are on the short list I gave you.
Right. Yeah, I haven't registered for the meeting yet. I'm still waiting for my OMG ID because I just got membership.
Oh, excellent. Good for you.
Yeah.
And then that automatically populates stuff with your profile information, which is nice because you don't have to retype it every time.
Right.
So cool. So University of Toronto is a member?
That's right. Now it is, yes.
Excellent. So this is good news. Thank you for that.
And this is Ed. I'll be down sometime Sunday afternoon as well. For me, it's just about a 2-hour ride.
Oh, well, that's handy. So I knew you were in the area, but I forgot exactly how far away. So there's a lot of stuff going on for you with finance, Ed. We should talk about that independently. And just looking at my flight, I get in when? Usually I get in really, really late, but it looks like I get in at 10 to Newark. So that's still pretty late, but it's not as late as I usually drag myself into town. So,
We're already talking about doing some API for KB stuff on Sunday, so you know, if I had traffic on Sunday shouldn't be a problem.
Right. Okay. So you're going to drive daily. You're not staying down there.
No, I'm not going to drive daily. I'm staying here.
Oh, okay. Good.
I'll, I'll be driving down and coming back Thursday night.
Okay, so I don't get in until, like, probably I'm at the hotel around 11 p.m. on Sunday night. So I won't see you until Monday morning. But Michael, I'll be in the ATI for KB's room, so look for us there.
Okay, sounds good.
As will I.
Okay, cool. And the other thing, Michael, if you think about it, in case I don't remind you on site, because things get really hectic for me at OMG meetings.
Right.
Monday afternoon, I will be stuck in the AB session. And for people that are presenting RFPs or are building up RFPs or are thinking about presenting RFPs, it's really, really helpful if you sit in on an AB session or two. Not the whole time, but maybe for an hour or two.
Okay, that sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, it's good intro, and Andrew gives a presentation for new OMG members at some point Monday or Tuesday that may also be worth your while.
Oh, that would definitely be useful, yes.
So, you know, even though we want you to help us with API for KBs, I'll try to look for that on the agenda. If I find it, I'll send you a note.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, we'll be in contact and you know, meet each other in the morning, Monday morning.
Definitely. Although, remember, it's going to be 6 a.m. for me, so I may be not Johnny on the spot.
Okay.
I need to drop off, guys, and I guess, Michael, you do too, but this is great. Tell this is really going to be good. I think it's coming out well. I think it's a very nice RFP. I think Roy's comments were spot on for the most part and have been useful. Please do keep going through them and consider what he says about the restructuring, because he's right on about that too. And then and these are just things that somebody objective coming in out, you know, that hasn't been as close to it as even I've been, can make really useful suggestions. So I think he did a nice job. And I'll let him know that in about 2 minutes. But he probably would be happy to answer questions if you have any and exchange email with him as well. And let me know if I didn't give you his email, I can.
Okay, thanks. Then I suggest that we will continue the discussion of Roy's comments by email. I will provide some suggestions how to handle them, and then we can discuss the rest by email, and then at the beginning of next week, we should have a new RFP document. And the only question that remains is whether the August of 2014 is the realistic deadline for an initial submission.
Yeah, and you guys need to decide that yourself.
Yeah.
I can't help you with that.
I think it's realistic.
I'm guessing you want at least 9 months, which would give you the August date, but that's, like, really minimum from the time that the RFP is approved.
Yeah, so we might want more like 12 months from that point in time.
But I'm thinking that, you know, you could always do something sooner, although that's kind of frowned upon in case there are other submitters who want the full amount of time and you've surprised them. So there's a fine line you have to walk when you're picking those dates. Because once you've published the RFP, then other people know how much time they have to submit to it. Now, because they have to submit an LOI letter and register as a potential voter, that should give you an idea of who might want to submit.
Mm-hmm. But 12 months is usually a reasonable horizon.
Yeah.
So 12 months from December. So I guess it would be December 14 instead of August.
Right. If you have a lot of interest generated, you can always extend it.
That's right. So you could decide that you want to leave it at August. Then if you moved it out, it would be in November, because of the four-week rule, it would be a November submission date.
I have
and
to drop
Michael,
off.
Let me know by email if you want to adjust any dates, and I can help you figure out what the exact date should be.
Okay.
So then let's move it forward 3 months to November, then we have basically the next meeting.
Yeah. All right. I got to run. See you guys. Michael Lee in Toronto and Ed in Toronto and Ed on the phone in a minute. And we'll talk to you soon. Let me know if you need anything else.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. So since Michael has to drop off also soon, yeah, I suggest that we can close the meeting unless we have some other important issues.
Tell, do you want to maybe have a Skype call, you know, early next week to, say, talk about the presentation?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I'll send an email to see what a good time is.
Uh-huh. And I will send around the new document with the changes that we have discussed and other changes, and then we can discuss it via email.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, then thanks for coming, and yeah, see you next time in 2 weeks.
Yes. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.